We begin, as we always do on Mondays, with the political junkie Ken Rudin. And welcome back, Ken. How are you today?
Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? No, actually, I know because
stop it.
That's 20 minutes. That's 20 minutes right there.
But, that's right.
You know, it's just remarkable. I mean, every time I'm prepared to sit down and talk with you on Monday morning, I said, can anything be weirder than what we saw last week?
I know.
And every week gets weirder. Yeah.
I was just saying to a colleague here that it feels like, 6 weeks have passed since the last time we talked last Monday, because that's how much has happened in the news cycle since then. Wow.
And the stuff that happens often is just pointless stuff. And like, for example, if we want to talk about what happened with the Green Beret who was killed in Niger, and the back and forth between Trump and the family over his response to it. The question should be, why did he die in Niger? What's going on in Niger? And what's the story behind it? I mean, we heard a lot about Benghazi. Why aren't we hearing anything about Niger? But what we are hearing is just a back and forth, a silly, petty stuff that goes on and on. And the saddest thing of all, I think, is that they brought the White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, into this whole thing to be part of the attack machine. And that's disappointing because Kelly's one of the few, in my view, one of the few good guys left in this administration.
To come back to your first question there about what American troops are doing in Niger, I saw Senator Lindsey Graham on one of the Sunday shows yesterday, and he said he didn't know that American troops were there. John McCain didn't know. So if some of the leading senators who sit on these military committees don't know, who does know, and how does that happen?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, there was an article, I think, in today's New York Times talked about that for the most part, aside from a few exceptions, there are American troops in almost every country around the world. But again, if there's jihadists in Niger, we don't know about this. Obviously, there's no explanation from the government what's going on there and why these four Americans died. But again, let's do the petty politics first, because that's what they do best with.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, this is distasteful, but it has sucked up the oxygen of a week of news reporting. President Trump actually opened the door to this, right? I mean, he was asked, I think it was last Monday, about the death of these soldiers in Niger. And he started talking about making these calls and the fact that he did it when previous presidents haven't. And that was just wrong.
Right.
Previous presidents, of course, right, have communicated with the families of fallen soldiers.
Exactly. He said he said his predecessors, Obama and Bush, did not. Obviously, that was not true. And then immediately the president called the families of the four who were killed. But the first controversy began when he called the family of the Johnson family in Florida, who basically said that he told his widow that her husband knew what he signed up for. So,
right.
And a lot of people thought that was very uncaring or callous, or maybe Trump didn't know how to express his feelings, but it just felt like it was off. And to make it worse, Frederica Wilson, the Democratic Congresswoman from Florida, who was in the limousine when the president called and the call was on a speakerphone, she heard the president say that. And then she went public saying the president, you know, was callous and insensitive. And then the White House responded by attacking Wilson as a showboat, as a know-nothing. And then they brought Congressman Chief of Staff John Kelly into all of this, saying, well, not only is she a lightweight, but she also took credit for something that regarding the funding of an FBI building, and which is not true. So there were so many things that just didn't have to happen. And yet, like so many things with the White House, it just spiraled out of control.
Ken, I've been thinking and hearing the analysis on how the president might have communicated this message to Sergeant Johnson's widow. He knew what he signed up for out of context. You know, it's hard to imagine how that gets said in an empathetic way. If I was going to give the president the benefit of the doubt, and I think we should, I don't think anybody intends to hurt the feelings of family members of soldiers who are killed overseas. But he also is not known for you know, empathetic expression. He struggles with this. I mean, we saw that with the hurricanes. We saw it in Puerto Rico. We saw it in Las Vegas. This is just something that he really has to work on, and it can come back to bite him in a situation like this.
But yes, and I agree with you completely. And I think the attack on Trump may not be necessary if that's all it was in his inability to express how he really felt about it. But as I said, Congresswoman Wilson made it much worse, not only talking about the private conversation that he had with the widow, but he also said, he also apparently, according to Congresswoman Wilson, that he kept talking about your guy and your husband without ever mentioning Johnson's name, and that upset Wilson too. And then when the White House went after Wilson, Wilson said the White House is filled with white extremists. And so it became a racial thing. So again, what may have been a misunderstanding or at least an inability by Trump to express how he feels, not to mention the fact that he talked about Obama and Bush as if they didn't do did do.
That's really the thing. Yeah.
That's where it started. I mean, yeah. And so obviously this is what we're obsessed with right now about this back and forth. And it's just so heartbreaking because nothing gets passed, nothing gets done in this administration without some kind of a controversy or calamity or anger that often could be just resolved earlier.
If you have questions for Ken Rudin, the political junkie, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at @KerryNPR. I was wondering, Ken, if George W. Bush's, former President Bush's speech had been planned before President Trump said what he said on Monday, because, I mean, some of the things that President Bush said, again, not mentioning Trump by name, but there was no secret to who he was talking about, were really pushing back on the harshness of the political discourse. Do you think this is a long-planned speech?
Oh, yes, because this discourse, this harsh discourse didn't begin with the Johnson family. Obviously, this has been going on for much of the 9 months. And of course, Bush is still simmering over the attacks Trump launched against his brother,
yeah,
Jeb Bush,
true.
Who was running for president.
Right.
So there's no question how George W. Bush feels about the president. But to his credit, Bush never really he had a respectful distance after he left the White House. He never, unlike Vice President Dick Cheney, he never attacked Obama and Obama policies. He felt it's up to my successor to do the job he needs to do, and I'll just stay out of it. But apparently, clearly, that there are a lot of Republicans, and certainly George W. Bush included, who just feel that this discourse has been so tarnished and so tainted and so ugly that he just had to speak out. I think the speech was planned a long time ago, but the timing was certainly impeccable when you see what went on this week.
It was. Let's listen to a little bit of this. And then, Ken, I want you to think about whether it is time for someone like President Bush to speak directly to President Trump, to name him in this speech. But here's a bit of what he said.
Bullying and prejudice in our public life sets a national tone, provides permission for cruelty and bigotry, and compromises the moral education of children. The only way to pass along civic values is to first live up to them.
Yeah, those are some high-minded ideals that I think every American would like to see our political discourse embrace. Should he be speaking more directly to President Trump?
Well, I don't know what influence he has. I don't know what, it's kind of interesting. I've looked a lot on social media this weekend, and so many people said, I miss George W. Bush. The thought of people saying that, it was just pretty remarkable, because we remember when he left office, his numbers were really, really, really bad. And at the same time this weekend in California, Steve Bannon, Trump's former guru or still guru, said basically that Bush had the worst administration in history, the worst ever.
Ken, he used words like dangerous, and I think he used the word destructive. I watched a bunch of the speech. What's the strategy behind that?
There is a battle in the Republican Party of the old establishment, which includes Mitch McConnell and the Bush brothers and people like that, and the new Trump supporters who feel that you know, the reason Trump won is because he took on the old guard. He took on politics as usual. And the Bushes were the reason why the Republican Party was in such poor straits, bad straits, not only after 2006 and 2008, but it continued into 2012 when Mitt Romney ran. So Trump was a different kind of Republican. The Steve Bannon conservatives, the new alt-right are different kinds of Republicans. And there's a movement going on. And, you know, we talked about the battles within the Democratic Party between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and which way the Democrats should go. That battle is really alive and well in the Republican Party. And we'll probably see a lot of that next year in the Republican primaries.
Lori called in to say, Ken, that you were saying everything is always a controversy. She says, I've never heard anyone talk about the fact, I think this is what she's getting at, that a controversy is created because that will obscure a different controversy. I actually think there's been a lot of analysis that President Trump is very good at the shiny object over here so you don't notice the other thing over there.
You know something, I've heard that a lot, and I understand what Lori's saying, but I kind of disagree with that. I don't think that he, the president, is focusing on this shiny object because as a distraction and to divert our attention from what we should really be looking at. First of all, Robert Mueller obviously is not distracted. He's doing what he has to do. But I think more importantly, this is what Trump does. He gets, you know, he won't focus for days on what happened in Puerto Rico,
right,
if you look at his Twitter feed, but he'll talk about Hillary Clinton and the crooked Hillary Clinton, and I hope she runs again because I'd love to beat her again. This is what he... You know, it's something that attracts his attention. He goes for it. I don't think it's a deliberate effort to redirect our views. I think it's just this is how Donald Trump thinks, and he's certainly impulsive, and there's no filter.
Call for you here, Ken, from Brenda in Woodbury. Hey, Brenda, what's your question for Ken?
Good morning.
Hi.
How much of Trump's behaviors are about strategy that he's been doing for a very long time, and that's that there's a problem, so then he attacks, then we focus on the attack rather than on the problem, and such as Niger or Russia, that it's almost like we're caught in this vicious cycle, and how do we get out of it?
What do you think, Ken?
Well, that's the question that nobody seems to answer. Is he crazy or is he a brilliant strategist? I would never call the president of the United States crazy, but I'm just saying, is it just by mad design or does he really know what he's doing? And, you know, I mean, right now he still seems to be, there was a perfect example of all the men who have been accused, the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, the Bill O'Reillys of the world, the Roger Ailes of the world, and they were all taken down because of their behavior. And why didn't that trickle down to Donald Trump and all the accusations made against him? I mean, part of it may have been the fact that Hillary Clinton was equally not the greatest candidate in the world. But it's interesting how Donald Trump seems to survive, even though his poll numbers aren't great. But he still certainly survives with his base when other people like the Weinsteins and the O'Reillys were unable to do so. It's fascinating. I don't know what the answer is, but he still has this lucky charm that it may run out eventually, maybe in 2018 or 2020. But right now, he's still surviving.
Ken, let me ask you a policy question here, because I was surprised to see Mitch McConnell talking yesterday on one of the Sunday shows about being willing to take a vote on the Senate floor on some kind of bipartisan health care bill. Now, is he talking about the Alexander Murray bill or is he talking about something different that may come out? It didn't seem clear. How do you read it?
I think he was talking about that. They were asking him about the Alexander Murray compromise bill. And,
uh-huh,
of course, remember last Tuesday when Alexander, the chairman of the Senate Health Committee, the senator from Tennessee, and Patty Murray, the Democrat from Washington, came up with this compromise about giving subsidies to allow low-income Americans to afford health insurance. The president sounded like he was for it. Then the next day he was against it. And what Mitch McConnell is saying is, look, if I have a majority of the Republicans can support this kind of compromise, and of course we have a long way to go before we see the actual language, and if the president says he'll sign it, then I'll bring it to the floor. But I'm not going to go through an exercise of just bringing something to of the floor so we can be embarrassed once again, so we can be defeated once again. I think he was talking about Alexander Murray, and he's not going to bring it up if there's not a Republican majority for it.
Okay, so I was going to say, because Schumer was on saying, hey, bring it to the floor, we've got the votes. But he wants the Republican votes for this. Okay.
Well, yeah.
All right.
You'll have 48 Democratic votes. That's not going to pass a bill.
A call here from Pat in Worthington. Hi, Pat. What do you want to say to Ken?
Okay. Yeah. So on the Trump call to the widow, I regard it as a positive statement. He knew what he was getting into. You know, basically the context is this guy signed up. He was a brave warrior. He signed up. He knew what he was getting into, and he signed up anyway.
I mean, that's kind of how John Kelly, Pat's stated this.
I mean, Pat's right. Trump is a great admirer of the military.
That's true.
You can either regard it in a positive or negative way. It certainly could be read both ways.
Ken, I agree with that.
I agree with Pat. I think he really didn't say it. He, the president, didn't say it the way he wished he had. And he's just, I mean, basically, when you heard John Kelly talk about his own son who was killed in Afghanistan in 2010, it was what he was meant to do. Part of his life, you know, was serving his country. And I kind of think that's what Trump meant to say, but it sounded awkward. And some people's minds, it was insensitive. But the thought of getting an apology or clarification from the president or the White House, lots of luck with that.
Hey, I don't want to let you go before I ask you about the timeline for tax reform. They're talking about getting this budget bill voted on and passed this week. And they're talking about getting tax reform done by the end of the year. That just blows my mind. Can they do that, Ken? Can they work that fast on such a huge reform?
The last time this was done was 1986. It took 11 full months of work. But clearly, whatever's in this bill, and of course it hasn't even started to be written yet, whatever's in this tax overhaul bill, the Republicans desperately need a victory. They didn't get it with health care. They didn't get it with almost anything else. They've got to pass something. This week, it looks like that the House will go along with what the Senate said about the budget outline. But now comes the difficult part of working out the language to get under the tax bills. But if you're talking about, you know, increasing the deficit, hurting the middle class, helping the wealthy, which is the Democratic argument of what this does, it can't be that easy. And again, right. you want to put that before the voters in advance of 2018.
And by the way, this was buried in some, it might have been the Times, this story about what they want to do about capping 401k contributions. I spotted it like way at the bottom of some page. That's going to be a big deal, too. Americans don't save enough for retirement now as it is, and you're going to cap it? Wow.
Well, Mitch McConnell was asked about that. He said, well, to be determined.
Mm-hmm. So, Ken, I'll talk to you next Monday, and it will be like 8 years of a news cycle between now and then.
It sure will. Thanks,
Gary. I'll see you then. Ken Rudin, the political junkie, with us every Monday.